kind of wanted to, but I wasn't going to because it's a different part of Father Sean Doherty's life. But to fire your old intro, Father Sean, because it was just the start of tens and tens and tens of thousands of people's day for 27 odd years, or however long you had that introduction, that dun 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 dun
dun dun dun dun.
And also what popped up on my memories, Father Sean, is it's 6 years ago in 10 days, so the 14th of July, I believe, when we had the program that was you saying goodbye to Highland Radio, which is unbelievable. And what a 6 years it has been for you. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Sorry.
Hey, I like your mugs, by the way. I never got these. Look at this. You're spoiled. The 9 to noon show. This is much swankier than I had.
I know.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the question?
The question was, how's the last 6 years been for you?
Well, it was just bringing memories back because my last day in here, I was sitting there at the end of the show. I had not got a clue, as you know. Everybody was upstairs and they'd flown my twin in and Maria, my sister, and all friends and, you know, all my colleagues. And there was this big surprise party and last end of the broadcast upstairs. And I was asked to go outside and I thought, what's going on here? I hadn't a clue. And I went up the stairs and everybody was there. There was, I don't know how many, and it was a wonderful thing. And I was so shocked. But how has it been? Well, it's been a journey, but life's a journey, isn't it, Greg, you know? Mm. So this has just been another part of the journey of my life. Very significant, obviously, change in my life, which I'm very grateful for. You know, you don't often, imagine you're going to get chances to change the direction of your life so dramatically, you know? So I'm very grateful that God has given me this chance to serve him in a different way.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that journey, but I just want to talk about the ordination on Sunday. It was an amazing thing to be a part of, and I was just trying to put myself in what it must have felt like for you, because obviously you had the bishop there and you had all your brother priests there, and behind you, dependent on what part of the process it was, you had a packed cathedral, and then this moment that you've built yourself up towards where you are finally ordained, and how that must have felt and how you could have been in the moment so that you can reflect on it. And like, what was Sunday like for you?
Yes, I mean, you wake up the same as you wake up in any morning, you know, with that kind of it's that time of the morning, and then it you know, triggers in that there's been so much preparation done beforehand, and all by other people, you know, people, as you know, were preparing all kinds of things, surprises for me and everything else, which I find out about later on. But during the, or just before the ordination, I arrived at the cathedral and the priests were arriving, and you mentioned Bishop Dolan and Bishop Boyce graced us with his presence, of course, too, which was beautiful. And I then forgot what I had to do in my head, and I said, I can't remember what I've got to do now. And so, you'll be fine. Everyone was saying, all the priests were saying, you'll be fine. You'll, you know, it'll all come to you. We'll look after you, you know. And it did go fine. And there's a lot of peacefulness happening and the laying on of hands. And at the same time, sometimes you're conscious of what you have to do next, but somehow it just happens.
There was a couple of lovely moments, and maybe it's normal at ordinations, but obviously this was the first I'd been to where the bishop embraces you. It was so emotional. I don't know what it was like for you, but it was like, he was saying to you, you know, I don't know what it, but it was, and there was another moment too, where you sat down. And I don't know which priest it might have been, but he just simply put his hand over onto your hand. And it was just a reassuring tap, as if to say, right, that's it. Or I don't know what he was trying to say, but it was those little moments that, you could feel, I felt the hair stand up on my neck.
Yeah, and quite a number of people said that, particularly about that moment with the bishop when he does they call it the kiss of peace, but it was a real embrace.
It was as if to say welcome, or I don't know, but it was just beautiful.
That's it, yes. And of course, that's what it's about, you know. As a brother priest, he is, of course, my bishop, but we're brother priests, and he's it was a lovely moment. And you mentioned the tap on the shoulder. Yeah, because they've all been through that moment, you know. Most of them, of course, at a much younger age than me. But they know what that feels like, you know, and how it feels. But you are carried along. You're carried along. I mean, I was carried along by the prayer of all the people who came. And as you know, Greg and your lovely partner, Aisling, was there as well, who I'd never met before. And just to have so many people from all areas of my life, you know.
It was the multiple families you talked of.
Oh, yes.
Which I thought was a great way of phrasing it and in the different stages of your life.
Yeah, and they were there from the beginnings of my life with my family, of course, and my twin sister, and all of my family. My sister Anne flew in from New Zealand. My brother Jimmy, who's listening and watching now, because I've just had a message from him with a picture.
Hi, Jimmy.
And all my family came, you know.
And I think there was a moment too, if I'm not mistaken, that this is the first time all of your family had gotten together. I think I heard one someone reference 35 years and another reference ever.
Ever.
It was a remarkable thing as well. And it makes it another special occasion on such a special day.
Well, it was because, I mean, we had my own brothers and sisters. And also, we hadn't all been together because when my mother died in 1988, and I was only 22 then, you know, and as a matter of fact, just as a sort of an aside here, my mother, I found out from being in the cathedral, was baptized, married, confirmed, married and buried from the cathedral.
You found that out last week?
Yes, for definite. I knew she was married and buried. I thought maybe it could have been Long Tower, but for the baptism, but it wasn't. It was all in the cathedral. So it made it very, very, even more, I suppose, significant and special in that sense, that there was this beautiful link with my beautiful, wonderful mother here. And also, there were cousins there from my mother's side and my father's side that had never, we'd never all been together. And, you know, Father Daniel, my cousin, he's my father's brother, his son is Father Daniel, and he's based in Scotland. So he was there with his family and he vested me. So that was very special. And he came over especially for it. And a number of other priests came and travelled. And the Vice Rector of Rome came last night for the first Mass. But to have all of my family there was just quite special. And we'd never had it before. Mm. Because when my mother died, my sister Anne lived in New Zealand. And she had missed. She hadn't got back in time. And when my brother died, he was only 42. And he only lived for a short time with cancer. And Anne had come over. And she was on the plane back, and he died while she was on the plane. Wild. So she, well, so there was never that link of everybody together, Greg, but there was for this. And, you know, it's a very, very special moment.
Yeah, and as I say, just learning that information about your mum as well. We'll come back to that, but just maybe a little bit back to the start, because you have a very distinctive voice, instantly recognisable. And that is obviously from your many, many years living here, but also your birthplace of Stoke-on-Trent. You talk to me about your family moving to the Northwest, Sean.
Well, my mother and father would have gone to live in England when they married. So that was a long time ago. My mother was born in 1928. So, you know, we're probably talking what, in the early 50s or whatever. She moved to England with my father. And I think they were in Morecambe at the beginning. So my father worked in the mining industry, and he had a job where he sunk the shafts of the coal mines, which meant he travelled a lot with his jobs. That meant when he went, he was usually given a house with it. You know, that's what happened in those days. I don't know if it does now. And so some of the family were born in Salford, I think, include Jimmy, who's listening in England now. And others of us were born in Newcastle-under-Lyme in Staffordshire, which is next to Stoke-on-Trent. But every time I say Newcastle, people say, oh, is it Newcastle-on-Tyne or is it Newcastle County Down? But it's near Stoke. And, you know, a good number of us were born there because a big family. There was I had five sisters and three brothers. Patricia died when she was six in Salford, which was an enormous burden for my parents. You know, it was a very, very difficult time for them, clearly. My father had died just before my brother died. So my mother was dead before my brother died, but they'd had to deal with this tremendous cross. And then my own Yeah, so that was like that was a big family of us, you know. They moved there and they travelled to different places to live, but we ended up then as a family located mainly in Newcastle under Lyme. And Anne moved to New Zealand when she was married, and she has two sons who are living in New Zealand, and Matthew and Christopher, great golfers. They lived on a golf course, so they've got brilliant. They're brilliant golf players and lovely lads. And they came to live in England for a time, which nearly broke Anne's heart. And then they've moved back now, and now Anne's got her own grandchild. So it's all worked out beautifully. Because, you know, when you're over in New Zealand, and even you've got your husband and your sons, which is your family, your main...
100%. You know, there's a drag, isn't there? Course, there's a connection there.
There always was, and there has been, you know. But it's lovely that she's back at home in England now with the family. And... So that's why Ellie lives in a different part of England, but most of us live around the Newcastle under Lyme area, and so we have Maria and Christopher and Jimmy and Margaret and Ellie and Anne and Sharon, of course, my twin, and so they were all there, and their husbands and partners and various nieces and nephews were there too, you know, which is lovely. So that's how we all ended up there, you know, and I came to Derry in my early 20s. And my mother came back with me eventually. But
so it was you came first?
Uh-huh. But she was very ill. She'd got cancer. Mm-hmm. And it developed... she'd had cancer when me and Sharon were born, actually. And so throughout her life, it was always, I think, something that she was acutely aware of, because she was always had to go for these checks, you know, which I know used to give her terrible anxiety, understandably. And it was always a worry, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, unfortunately, I mean, she was obviously only in her late 50s. In fact, she was my age and younger when she developed the cancer again. And she came to Derry. And I mean, obviously, it was a great blessing for me that I was able to look after my mum and my auntie Ellen, who's gone to her reward as well, looked after my mum and her family. And she died with me in Derry. When she was just 60. So some of my family, the last time they were in the cathedral was at her funeral, and next time was at my ordination, you know. But, so that was it. And then I did a bit, you know, I had a different career then, because I had a bit of acting theatre experience from England, you know, and I'd done a bit of that stuff. Always loved the church and loved my faith. And it wasn't something I was obviously broadcasting about necessarily. People knew I'd gone to Medjugorje and places like that. But
I was going to get to that. When you present a programme like this, as you did, and you clearly have a strong faith, and we'll pick the story up back there and fast-forwarding a little bit, Do you have to keep it in check, or is it a challenge in that regard, in that you don't want to come across as, I mean, you want to, you know, represent how caring you are and your understanding and your faith, but at the same time, you don't want you to be presenting a show that maybe is perceived as being through the prism of your faith. Was that a tough line for you to walk, or something you were able then to do subconsciously, Father Sean?
I think you're right. It's subconscious, and you know this. I mean, you're asking the question, but I know you know the answer, because you have to do it. Mm-hmm. And it is a difficult one, but it's something that I always was very conscious of from the day one that I began broadcasting here, that I wanted to be fair. Now, I know being fair doesn't always mean that, you know, you stay completely... You know, it kind of can be a cop out as well to just, you know, let other people do than not you. And I know you particularly are not afraid to give your opinion, you know, and be strong. And it takes courage to do that.
Today's not the great day to mention that. It's not it's not necessarily an opinion.
Why? What have I missed here? No,
you haven't missed it. Maybe I do, but I don't actively. It's not that I give my opinion. I think it's really more. It's more the line of questioning, which I would say most of the time's devil's advocate, but maybe it's perceived as opinion. This is not about me.
I think it's a quality, actually, you know, and because I think it's strength. Now, obviously, not if your opinion becomes a show. I'm not talking about that, but that you have the courage to say, no, well, isn't it this way? Isn't it that way? And sometimes you have to do that, you know.
So and you did too.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, you held people to account for
I think when you've got these earphones on, Greg, you know, you don't know what's coming, and you know, and sometimes, you know, you'd be in the middle of an interview or somebody would call in and then the story develops.
You have to adapt, don't you?
Yeah. And then also to, you know, be conscious of the other person. If there's a debate on two people or listeners are having a debate, you know, that you're conscious of if somebody, and you know, you have to say, well, hang on, you know.
Yeah, exactly,
and,
yeah.
And that was important. And I hope I was fair. I tried to.
No, you are. Everyone, that is the one thing that, that always comes back to you is A, your empathy, B, your understanding, C, your ability, I'm not including everything, but also your fairness as well. So you certainly achieved that. But in terms of religion playing a very important part in your life, and when you were doing the bit of acting and that type of stuff, and then as you moved into media, in the early part of your life, did you consider the priesthood? I mean, was that something that you had considered, or were you, was it just that you were a strongly religious person?
I think I had a tremendous grounding in the faith as a child. You know, I really did. I went to St. Wolstan's Catholic school in Newcastle-under-Lyme, and I had great people. You know, I was an altar boy. The priests were tremendous. Father Carr, Father McCabe was my earlier priest, and Father Carr, I served a lot with him because he was more at that age when I became sort of a 9, 10, 11, or whatever it was, and he was a lovely man, a great priest. And so these people all had a strong influence on me, plus others. And of course, some of the teachers as well, and the sisters, who Sisters of Mercy, actually, who looked after the school as well. And so I had a good grounding. And then at about, I think I would have been about 14, I thought, or maybe 15, I thought I'd like to at least pursue the possibility of looking at this. And
wow.
Yeah. And there was a weekend retreat in, I think it was St. Albans. And there was Sacred Heart Brothers and Priests. And I thought, I'll try that. And I went down and I thought this was it. You know, I loved it. And they were very, very interested in me pursuing it. And I thought at that time, I don't think I could do this academically. You know,
So it wasn't a faith thing. It was academic side.
I had no confidence. You know, I just didn't have confidence. I wasn't a very confident young person. And I probably was insecure and everything. And I thought, oh, I don't know if I could do this. And I mean, that stays with you, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, your nature changes in some ways, but not...
The self-doubt or your core personality traits are with you your whole life, aren't they?
Yeah. And basically, I thought, well, I don't know if I could do it. Now, they didn't think like that. They kept writing to me, but I just, I didn't have the confidence. That was really... And fear. And you never should let fear... You know, if I let fear stop me, I'd never be sitting here today as a Catholic priest, because fear will, you know, stops.
Do you wish you could have half an hour with your 14-year-old self?
Yeah, no. In some ways, no, because I think that because I have had the experiences in life that I've had now, it has given me an opportunity to understand and empathise with people in a much different way.
Yeah,
and that wouldn't have happened if I
like that. So there's no regrets. You can reflect on the decisions perhaps you could have made at 14, but also you can say, you know what, maybe everything happens for a reason, and now look at the person that you are and what you can bring with your life's experiences.
We are all the same, Greg. I mean, I've got many regrets and I've made many mistakes.
Yeah, we all have.
You know, and that, because I'm human, and, you know, in my human nature, you know, I've made many mistakes, and I'm aware of that. And as a result of that, and we should be, and as a result of that, and the pains and the difficulties you go through in life and everything else, you know, you understand what I'm talking about in terms of bereavement as well, and all of that, it gives you then, hopefully, and through the mistakes, some empathy for others and their pain and their difficulties. And because I'm doing what you're doing, I did what you're doing now, you develop techniques for listening to people. And I think in ministry, you need to listen. And as a broadcaster, the best gift that you can give anyone is to listen to them, and that people feel listened to. And you know when you're having a conversation with somebody, they know when you're listening to them, when you're not. You know? And that's what I think a lot of people in our society today, many of us need, is someone that will just listen without judgment, without saying, oh, no, you should do it this way, do it that way. Listen to people first. Listen to what their story is, because we don't know what their story is, mm-hmm. you know. And we all make judgments. Like, I mean, I'm no different than anybody else. But then I have to reflect and think, well, hang on, I don't know what happens to people in their lives and what makes them the way they are, yeah. or what makes a person, you know, we clash off each other and all these things. And then I sort of reflect, hang on, Sean, you know, cop yourself on, you know, you have made mistakes. And I think when you get older, you realize that more. And if I'd have been a priest, I don't know the answer to this, but if I'd have been a priest as a young man, you know, if I'd joined that sort of order then, who knows?
You couldn't have the knowledge that you have now. It would be impossible.
That's not to say that young priests can't do that, because
God
will give the grace when it's needed. But I do feel, what I think I'm trying to say is that God will always and does turn our mistakes.
You were called when you were ready as the person you've become for everyone that's influenced you, for every good thing, for every mistake we've all made. Mm. And that was the time that you had to make really big decisions. So you had to make those decisions with some guidance. You couldn't, it'd be very difficult to make the decision to leave this job and to pursue your new life without some, you have to feel that you're in being assisted in that decision, and not just by trusted individuals around you. But it is not a leap of faith, but you have to say, right, well, now is my time. The thing is, life is very, very tough. And it's only when a situation like this, where you recount your life, and I'm listening to you as you talk of it, and then I'm thinking of, you know, mine, if I were on your side and I was explaining the losses in my life, and if it was Caroline or if it was Kevin behind you, maybe he's young and it might not be. But when you put it down like that, you timeline it, God, we have an awful lot to go through. Your mum had so much to go through. I'm thinking when she was pregnant with yous.
Twins.
Mm. Like back then, mm-hmm. what treatment options were available, what decisions were made, what choices did she have to make? Yep. You know, and all of the different layers of what we talk about, life is really, really, it's wonderful. Mm. But it can be tough, can't it?
It can be.
It is tough.
Tough for everybody.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
And you know, when I was in Roma, I did some work with the Vatican Radio over there, little bits of work, and they were very interested. In Roma, anyway, generally, they were very interested in the broadcasting past. And they would say, well, actually, it's your broadcasting that has brought you to the point. Because as you know, Greg, we have heard and do hear so much that many of the things that I'll be listening to now and are listening to, I've been a deacon for a year, so people do come to you, obviously, and talk to you. It's different as a priest now, you're here and are able to administer the sacrament of reconciliation, so you can't do that as a deacon, but people still come to you with issues. And there's very, as they say, very little a priest hasn't heard, you know. Mm. But as a radio presenter and doing a programme like yours now, very little you haven't heard. So the human story, the human condition, and the difference for me now is obviously I'm ministering in a different way because I'm bringing people hope through you know, God's mercy that he's shown to me in my life and his love for me. And if he loves me, he loves you, and he loves me no more than he loves you and everybody else that's listening to this. And I think that's the message, and mercy. And Pope Francis, as you know, is very, very strong on the mercy and taking people where they're at on their journey. You know, take people where they're at. Where are you now? You know, let's accompany you in faith, mm-hmm. you know, and help. And I love that.
So then as you began your career in broadcasting, Highland Radio wasn't your first gig, but then you come in here, you settled into your show, and on you go. You've had many different roles and responsibilities, of course, in this organisation, but primarily, I think for the listeners' perspective, it would be, I mean, obviously they went on shows with and stuff, but it would be the broadcasting. Through, as you grew up, you know, you matured as a human. Mm. You were a baby when you started doing this, and then over 27 years, you know, we go through all of our roller coasters in life and what have you. Was that 14-year-old Sean always there with the interest in the priesthood? Did it come and go? Did it come in waves? Did you doubt yourself as a 28-year-old, as a 33-year-old, say, I kind of still feel there's something there, but nah. Mm. Like, how was that?
No, I don't think it was something I was thinking about daily, monthly, to
right,
be
okay.
frank, because, you know, this was my life. I loved and love Highland Radio. I always talk about Highland. I was so glad, you know, so many of you, as you know, with this massive picture, I think it was the biggest picture of the day at the ordination, was the Highland family over the whole span of Highland Radio. And I couldn't express in words what Highland... It's part of me.
It is.
I mean, it
yeah.
is absolutely
yeah, sure.
part of me and my life, the people that supported me and listened and put their, you know, trust in their stories with me as they do with you on a daily basis. That's a privilege that we never, ever can take for granted. And people from Derry, Donegal, Tyrone, you know, Donegal gave me such a welcome. And people used to say, you know, I remember a couple of people when I got the job at the beginning saying, oh, or actually more so when I went away. Say if we do a show somewhere else, maybe in or London or New York, mm-hmm. I know you've done a few in London, they would say to me, oh, how did you get on with that English accent? It was never.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it was always people outside, actually.
Yeah.
But Donegal put their arms around me, you know, and gave me such a loving embrace. I always felt held by people, you know, in the county who sort of had me back, you know. And reflect on it afterwards a lot as well, you know, especially after I left. And people say, do you miss Highland? Of course. How could you not? But I haven't left it because it's part of me.
And you're part of it. Of course, forever. Did you find, how did you deal with, I don't know how to describe it. You obviously you had to listen to a lot of people and a lot of it is people's very difficult times.
Yeah.
And people going through terrible loss of children and all that kind of stuff. And maybe you might be better equipped now to sort of deal with people coming to you with their concerns. How did you deal with, doing a show like this for so long, whereby you know you can go home, things don't leave you, they stay with you. Did you learn to cope with that? Was it always difficult or what?
It depends on the mood you're in, I think, as well. You know, because of course, and there were some profoundly difficult moments, as you know, and stories, and you in your. I've been listening to you in Rome, and Father John Joe Duffy was on the altar last night for the first mass, along with other brother priests, and he came to the ordination. And I don't know if people in the Northwest realise worldwide, and I mean worldwide, and in Rome, it was mentioned to me several times, how much his ministry at that time meant and was felt. I know by the family and the friends and those who lost so much, and I referenced it last night at my first mass because he was there, and he got a round of applause, and quite rightly so. But that round of applause went out to the from the hearts of people for the families. I was in Rome, and I know you were broadcasting and listening to these stories, and I was listening to you as it was developing. I saw a clip come up that was an event, and my heart, I knew. You know, and I know when the media. You know, this is something else. This is a big event, and I hadn't. Nobody had an idea at that point how big it was and how tragic it was going to be. And in Rome, I was watching it from a distance, and everybody was praying. Our hearts were going out, and still are, for the families, for those who lost their lives, for those who have been, you know, injured, and their families and friends, you know, everybody affected by it, deeply affected people, of course, the first primarily the families, but also others. And it was and Father John Joe, as you know better than I, because you spoke to him many times, he had a pivotal role there, along with others.
He is something. Father John Joe is just is, and he and amongst others too, and those that support him, he was amazing. And you're right too. And I think, and I get the point that you're making. I'm changed forever by that. Not in any way close to what others are. And I would speak to the families or some of the families and all that. But it does this job and it does everything, it does impact you and it does change you and you take these things with you. I'm going to take a break, as you would understand, that has to be done. I probably won't take them all, so I might get the sack. But you'll stay with us just to the end of the show, will you?
Yes.
These are comments that are coming in for you. Okay. I don't even know where you might start with them, but the great thing is we can give them to you and you can take them at your leisure. But it's just an absolute outpouring of love. People delighted to hear you, people delighted to see you. And we're going to fast forward a wee bit maybe to... I think your time in Meduguru was really important to you, wasn't it? And we might talk about that afterwards, if that's okay. And whatever you want to talk about, Sean, I mean, you've been doing this way longer than I have, so if you want to just go off on a tangent, please do. Okay, we'll be back with more from Father Sean Doherty after these messages. We are delighted to still be in the company of Father Sean Doherty, who so kindly made himself available to come back into his room. This is his room, really, that he entertained and... informed so many of you for so long. Sean, Father Sean, so is there a moment, whereby something happened or something clicked that you says, right now is the time?
Yeah, and you've actually just prompted me to mention Donna McGettigan and the McGettigan family. Donna lives in Medjugorje and her mother Cora died last week. And James was her father. And he often mentioned Medjugorje to me. Donna, she went there during the early apparitions and ended up living there. Mm-hmm. She had a big family there. And she came to the ordination just after the funeral. And it was very, very hard for her. And I just really, I couldn't thank her enough for making that effort. I didn't expect it. And Jimmy as well. And so when I went out to Medjugorje, about 15 years ago or so, Donna arranged the accommodation, and I just heard about it. I've told this story many times, probably not to you, because I've been away when I was telling it. But you were coming in to do the news, and I don't know if you remember this. I said to you, it was in the middle of the week. I says, "Oh, I must be due a holiday soon," and you said, "You're booked from Friday or Thursday." Do you remember that?
I have a vague memory of
and
it.
And I said, "Really?"
I have another memory of me ended up doing a 5K, but anyway.
Yes, I couldn't get it. That was Buncrana, and you weren't even, you know, you
I was in me running shoes.
I know. I couldn't get over that because we were all sort of preparing, and you ran it anyway.
But go on.
But anyway,
I says you're booked Friday.
So I went, I said, "I'm going to go to Medjugorje." I'd heard about it, you know, and Don had been always saying to me, particularly her daddy. And I went out and I was really impacted by it. And most people are, very few would not be. And of course, now the church, allows for pilgrimages to go. And it's a beautiful place, a very peaceful place. People have faith and no faith go. Lots of stories, conversion stories, and a lot of vocations. And over the years, I went and along with my community founder, Father Neil Carlin of the Columba community, who I cannot fail to mention, and hopefully we'll talk a bit more about him because he has gone to the Lord, but he had a profound impact on me along with the Columba community. And Marguerite is now the leader of that. And they did so much planning for this, as you know, you met them for the ordination. But Father Neil had been to Medjugorje with me twice as well, but he'd been in the early years of the early apparitions. And I went anyway, and I just found it incredible. And I don't know, unless you've encountered it, I suppose it's very hard to explain it. It's a very beautiful, peaceful place. And I made my decision there, actually. And I came back here, and that's when I made it very clearly there. It was a very peaceful decision that, yeah, this is what I'm going to try and do. But not, you can't say for definite, because you it's something I'm going to at least take space now, leave hand and consider it. And that's what I did.
Mm. How big of a decision was that? I mean, did you make that decision on your own? I know that sounds like a loaded question. But
Yeah.
And I'm about the decision for this to be your path of your life, you know what I mean? But did you get a sense of guidance when you were in Medjugorje, or was it just the whole environment and your conversations and the influences from people that...
No, I would say you're right. There was definitely guidance. I felt guided, you know. I'm not going to say, I got hit by a flash.
No,
of
I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying just that sometimes we need a help with a decision and we don't know exactly precisely how that's delivered to us, but we hear it.
Yeah.
And that's really quite, that's impactful. That's big.
Having gone for so many years, and so many times,
yes.
you know, I mean, people made jokes to me, you've been more times than Mary, you know. And that was one of the seminarians in Rome, actually. Yeah, but he went himself then, yeah. So got my own back on him. But I went, and over those years, I think it's a developing thing, but I started to consider, you know, maybe there's something happening here in my life, a change happening, you know. And definitely when I made the decision, yes, of course, there's guidance, because you don't make these decisions on your own, obviously. You know, it's not about, if it's you doing it and you're not considering, well, what you think. Now, you have to be very careful trying to imagine what God's will is for you, because, you know, God is almighty, and we can only hope we're doing what God wants us to do and trying to do what he wants us to do and hopes for us. And I felt very peaceful about it.
Brilliant,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to leave enough time for you to talk about the people that are important to you and the influences, yes. If that's okay. And rather than sort of try and carry the story through, because I don't want you to leave here without that opportunity, because you've referenced Father Carlin there, so I think that's important. So maybe if you, we should, and you reference them to, because there's so many people. I think the impression I got from you, Sean, is that every person you've interacted with,
yes,
is important.
Everyone.
You know, even the most fleeting of things. Mm. But obviously then there's going to be people that have a far, you know, far greater. So can we talk about some of those people now? Because they've helped get to where you are now.
Well, Billy Patterson's sister Christine is probably travelling in the car now with her husband Michael O'Dowd. And they're travelling with Sister Carmel from Rome, who was a sister in Rome with me. She's now back in Ballinasloe. They're taking her back. They may be listening. I hope they said they would be in the car now, going back. And she wanted to meet Father Neil from Rome as well. She'd heard about him and read his book. And she managed to meet him before he died. And anybody who encountered Father Neil never forgot him.
Mm-hmm.
A very, very, very inspirational man. Very, very important figure during the Troubles. And also, of course, the founder of White Oaks Rehabilitation Centre, which is, of course, part of the Columba community. I encountered him at about 20-something in Columba House. Mm-hmm. He still remembers where I was sitting when he met me.
Wow.
That's the kind of man he was.
That's the people he would meet.
Yeah. And you know, Greg, when you're speaking to Father Neil, and I did interview him a few times before I ever became involved in the community, he could read you. It's very hard to explain. He had very piercing blue eyes, a man of deep faith, tremendous compassion, and humanity, and strong, you know. I mean, he wasn't afraid to say, but very compassionate, you know, and loving, and his family, his wonderful family. And he founded this community, the Columba community. We've got the Celtic Prayer Garden, we've got White Oaks, we've got the Easter Centre, you saw
it's
it.
Amazing.
Yeah. 6-acre Celtic Prayer Garden, we've got Columba House, all these wonderful places. And they all formed a big part of it. And so the Columba community, Medjugorje, lots of people I encountered through Highland if I went away to Medjugorje, I was always impressed by, and I know I gave things to you as well, you were always pleased to get a medal or something, and everybody was, and it didn't matter where people were on the journey. I know people who had no interest in the Catholic Church whatsoever, but I would say, I got you this from Medjugorje, oh, thank you. And when I'd meet them, they'd open up and say, look, I still have it in my wallet, you know. People still have, people, you know, in their hearts, most people are searching for, and maybe their heart, or there's a hole in their heart, and they don't know what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. Maybe we fill it with drink or drugs or whatever it is we do, but that it is actually God that I've realized. This was my understanding, and is that it's God we should be filling it with, and how we do that, and when we do that.
And that's something I've heard, and I think that's come. I don't feel in a position to say, so you knock it back or whatever, but I think your life experience and everything that you've been through in your life, you're coming with a very understanding approach. You every time you speak, you try and speak to everyone, not just people who are very religiously practicing Catholics, or not even Catholics, or not people of faith, or not even churchgoers. Mm. But you seem to go out of your way in an incredibly positive way to include everybody, so that, and I think this has come from your career here and your whole life, that you don't leave anyone behind. You include everybody, and when you speak, it's clear to me that that's what you're doing, in a very natural way, not in a very deliberate way. But I'm getting the impression that something's incredibly important to you, that you speak to everybody, regardless of where they are in their life or on their journey.
Well, and it should be, because as Catholics, that's what we're called to do. As Christians, that's what we're called to do,
yeah.
You know. And read the story about Zacchaeus, you know, on the outside, you know, dying to see Jesus, climbed up the tree. Well, Jesus brought him down and went to his house. And he didn't say, you've got to convert before I come into your house. He went into his house and he ate with him. And he was so overwhelmed by meeting Jesus and encountering him. He wanted to, all the mistakes he'd made and the debts he owed, I'll pay you 10 times or double it or whatever you want, you know. So Jesus was not looking, he was looking for the lost sheep. And he would go, and my prayer card for the ordination was the lost sheep, you know. And we're all lost at different stages of our lives and you know.
And we'll be again.
Of course.
Because life is a challenge. We're never always there, are we? We'll always stumble.
Of course.
We just get up and keep moving forward.
Of course. And as long as we know that, and as long as we know, you know, I spoke to parents last night and they'd lost a child. And I didn't realise who they were until they were speaking to me, because I didn't know them personally, but I knew the story. And they were talking, and, you know, it's profound stuff. And only somebody who has lost a child would understand that, you know. And that's the privilege of the job that you're doing and the role you have now. And we do it through the radio. It's a very different way now as a priest, that you're trying to listen. And it was trying to listen to them, you know, the difficulties and the struggles. But Jesus, I was, you know, obviously, they are people of faith.
Mm.
But of course, those moments, you might question, where's God in all of this? But this is what never fails to amaze me, that the people who've been through the most tremendous difficulties in their lives, and you might say have every reason to say, how could there be a God, you know, allow this to happen, have this faith, and they say, only for my faith it gets them through. Now that, you know,
and I think, you know, part of me is envious of the position that you will have now, the position of trust, the position that people will come to you, the comfort you'll be able to give people and do give people. I think that's a beautiful gift to have, if you know what I mean, a beautiful position to be in.
Well, we're all in unique positions. You're in the position of being a wonderful father. I've seen you with your children. I've seen you the posts as well, because I'd seen your older children, and they're lovely, and you saw them as little children. So you have that, which I don't have. So we all have our own experiences, our own journeys, our own vocations. And not everybody is called to priesthood. Not everybody is. Everybody has, you know, a different status in life, and that's fine.
Okay. Father Sean Doherty, we've just had so many... comments and requests, and so many people listening and watching. And I think that's a testimony to you. And also, as I said to you off air, I've never seen anything that's good news have the reaction that I have to your, like, you know, you talk about family, it's clear people still see you as part of their family.
Oh.
Because the reaction they've had, whether it's on Highland, whether it's on Donegal Daily, whether it's on Donegal Now or any of it or wherever it might be, people are genuinely so happy for you, which is lovely.
It is lovely.
It's probably not required, but it's a lovely thing to have.
It's a lovely thing, and I'm aware that not everybody, you know, has a great relationship with the church, or would, you know, maybe think he's a great guy to be. That's fine too, you know, because I probably would be thinking that of others. That's the way of it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm aware of that. And I wanted to mention, Greg, the Donegal Hospice, because as a patron, I haven't been around, and I know that people have been very supportive of it. And, you know, Grace and Isabel were there at the ordination. So I know, and I'm very grateful that people continue to support it. And I know that you as a group, as Highland Radio, and David James doing this jiving and everything. Right. He's been doing brilliant work. And please keep supporting them in the Foyle Hospice and the Ray of Sunshine in Africa, you know. Maybe you get you out one day. You could take a whole team. Would love that. Sure. Olive would love it. And, you know, and to Caroline, the last thing that happened made it terrible mistake, the last show, because, you know, it ended all like this will now very quickly. And the mic went off, and the only person I hadn't thanked was Caroline.
She still hasn't forgiven you.
No, well, she will now. So to the priest's father, Paul, Father Michael, and those who helped me through my ordination to Bishop Donald, Bishop Boyce, all the brother priests, all the people who came, all those who sent me good wishes and love and prayers, and those I'll never be able to thank enough, the people of Highland and the listeners and those who supported me, and Caroline Orr, the producer as well, who'd, you know.
She's really the person who does the show, if the truth be told.
So don't tell everybody that.
No, but I'm just the man. You will not know where you're going to be based for another while.
At 11, maybe around next weekend.
And are you doing any other masses in Donegal soon?
I'm doing one in Erith, which is where my father is from, in near Clonmany, on Friday evening. So there'll be mass there on Friday evening. That's my first one in my dad's parish.
Do you remember how you used to sign off your show?
Whatever you do, do it.
It's yours, safe.
Do it nicely, do it safely, but most of all, do it with
Highland Radio. Father Sean, it's been wonderful, and it's been wonderful to see where you are. Anyway, it's just a lovely story, as
thanks,
I said earlier on. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in to
thank
us,
you.
And hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you.